Welcome to the Mad Tech Podcast from ExchangeWire, bringing you the latest news and views from the world of ad tech, media, and marketing.
Hello and welcome to the Mad Tech Podcast. I'm Amy, editor at ExchangeWire, and today our guest is Rich Aston, managing partner at First Party Capital. How are you today, Rich?
Hey, Amy. Yeah, doing very well, thank you. Good to be back on the show. Thanks a lot for the invite.
Good to have you here. And we're also here with John Still, our head of content. How are you, John?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah, happy to be here as always.
Good. And so today we'll be discussing an FTC investigation into Google and Amazon, an ads partnership between Amazon and Netflix, and some recent acquisitions in the ad tech industry. So let's get into the first story. The US Federal Trade Commission has launched an investigation into whether Amazon and Google misled advertisers, specifically whether both companies properly disclosed terms and pricing for ads. So its investigation into Amazon focuses on its advertising auctions and whether it disclosed reserve pricing for some search ads, which refers to the minimum price advertisers must accept before they can buy an ad. Meanwhile, its investigation into Google focuses on its internal pricing process and whether it increased the cost of ads in ways which were not disclosed to advertisers. And now both are due to face trials on 22nd of September. So how serious is this, Rich? What do you think? If it's found that both companies have been misleading advertisers?
Well, look, on one hand, it is clearly very serious, given the hundreds of billions of dollars that flow through these platforms, tens of billions of dollars probably every year, hundreds of billions perhaps. So yeah, on one hand, very serious, but on the other hand, take all that with a pinch of salt, because given the recent DOJ case against Google in the US, and it's kind of amounted to nothing. So it's really hard to, I guess, take this too seriously, which is a shame because they obviously should be penalized if they're misleading advertisers. At the end, it's a massive tax on their P&L if they're paying more for ads than they thought. It's been interesting reading Ari Papara's book, Yield, recently about kind of Google's rise to dominance and the monopolistic tendencies that they have, put in place. And it would just kind of, reading all those stories, just wouldn't be surprising if the people on the ads team at Google and Amazon were doing things that they maybe shouldn't have been doing.
Yeah, it wouldn't be surprising at all. John, what do you think?
First, I'm surprised you got a copy of Yield. I couldn't get one. I looked on Amazon and it was completely sold out. So if you could pass that on when you're finished, I'd love to give it a good read.
I'm a Kindle guy, then if I can share that with you.
But, oh, that's probably illegal. But then when in Rome, eh? Anyway, no, I think it is... I'm a bit heartbroken by Judge Mehta's remedies. As you probably heard on the podcast last week, anyone who's a regular listener, it's been massively disheartening. It seemed like a huge opportunity for the industry to really regulate. There was a chance here. And it's just been passed over in lieu of financial settlement that just doesn't matter ultimately. I'd love to think that this would be any different, that the FTC would be able to go in and we'd prove that these actions were bad and of detriment to the whole industry. But it's like same as it ever was stuff. They will investigate. They will find something. It will be either contested or just keep rolling and rolling and rolling. It's hard to keep covering this ground on Google. We have to, because it's the ad tech industry and it's essential. And there's some really interesting cases in private court coming up from the likes of Pugmatic and Magnite who are going to take on Google separately. But in terms of overarching US regulatory action, it's just like, oh, well, yeah, it'll be fun to see what they suggest and then what actually gets done. It is very, very serious, but I doubt whether anything will happen.
Yeah, that's true. And what does this tell us about the state of the ad tech industry, John? Just digging a bit deeper into it.
It's that the industry has been held over the barrel for so long and that these things keep getting discovered. Like, there's fine after fine after fine. They pay the fine. They go on, claim that they'll change, and they don't change. And I'm not surprised to see Magnite and Pubmatic and others going down a litigious route here, because these probes keep finding that these guys have broken the law and that they have missold their advertising. They have priced incorrectly on purpose. And it shows that, the open internet, advertising across the open internet has been to a huge detriment because of these large companies and the walled gardens like Meta. Who have, like I said, had the industry over a barrel, and I would love to see sea change. I would like to see a more open and transparent process here, but I'm disheartened today.
Rich, what does it tell us about the state of the ad tech industry? Can you add anything there?
Yeah, look, it's obviously frustrating, I think, for independent ad tech players in particular, you know, the ones that are doing things the way they should be in terms of transparency and, you know, treating their customers correctly, if their larger competitors are not doing the same, but ultimately either are not particularly held accountable or just slapped on the wrist with a meaningless fine for these large companies, then yeah, it is obviously frustrating. On the other hand, I think we've probably been saying this a while, but, you know, the more these things happen, then from a kind of advertiser and publisher perspective, hopefully they do more and more consider, you know, using more alternative options and not being overly reliant on one or two large tech platforms. I think what would be really interesting to see is, will there be a kind of evolution of, you know, ad tech vendors suing the likes of Google? Could advertisers turn around and sue sort of Google and Amazon? I mean, that would, I think, be a huge kind of sea change, which might finally actually cause things to change if that's the more kind of direct commercial impact coming from the actual advertisers themselves versus, you know, the kind of courts. Do I think that's likely? Probably not. But I think given if we are going to see potentially dozens or hundreds of ad tech companies jumping on the bandwagon of kind of law cases, then why not advertisers and publishers as well?
Yeah, that would be, I mean, you know, Magnite and Podmatic, we're not talking Arthur Scargill stuff here. This isn't like, you know, socialism for the people, but it's to see the industry unite and take the action into their own hands. I think we might see a lot more of that. I mean, when Matt put the story in our, you know, WhatsApp group, my response was like, the floodgates are going to open here. And I do think there'll be a lot more people who want to get theirs from Google now in light of this. So that's the interesting side compared to the FPC, FTC, not FPC, that's you guys.
Yeah, leave us out of it.
Yeah, I'll leave you guys out of it, sorry. But yeah, the FTC rulings, I don't know if they hold any weight for me.
It will be interesting to see if PubMatic and Magnite do get, you know, potentially hundreds of millions, if not billions, in compensation. And then actually, you know, what is the knock-on effect? That could be used for good because they could then go and, you know, invest in a whole lot of innovation, you know, potentially, you know, get acquisitive. So I think, yeah, that could be helpful for those companies, but it's unless you're a lawyer, in which case they always make money, but it's kind of hard to see how the wider ad industry would necessarily benefit unless things do change considerably.
Yep.
Yeah.
Agreed.
And John, do you think there's a way that advertisers can protect themselves from these kind of practices, I guess, before it gets to like the legal stage with the lawsuits?
Choose your spend wisely, I suppose. Consider your spend, which again is another issue because I think one of the big parts is that there is no choice. It was the entire point of the monopoly ruling is there is no other avenue to go. So it's easy for me to say watch your spend, but it's not like taking it off a platform. It is a monopoly for a reason. It is everything. So it's tricky. I don't know. Lawyer up.
Yeah. Rich, what do you think?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, we're probably, 20-ish, 25 years into this sort of digital advertising revolution, depending on how exactly where you kind of do the starting point. But it is an inherently complex and sort of messy space with a lot of nuance. And it clearly shows that even very sophisticated advertisers probably struggle to really understand all the bells and whistles and kind of auction mechanics. I'm learning a lot, certainly from that book here. It's been really interesting kind of understanding some of the practices that Google have used to kind of maybe obfuscate certain things and kind of charge hidden margin. But yeah, I think to John's point, you know, if at all possible, you know, diversify your spend into kind of other non sort of gaffer, do we still call them gaffer? I'm not sure. Gaffer channels and FANG maybe. But yeah, obviously, if you're able to reach whatever, 80% of the kind of online audience through those four or five main platforms, then it is harder to diversify spend at scale. But I think, yeah, to the extent that it's possible, try and, yeah, diversify that spend. Also make sure you've got experts that really do understand, you know, how these platforms work and know what to look for. Obviously, the procurement piece is key, but again, it's about knowing the right questions to ask and the rights of legal things to be looking at, which I'm sure is very complicated given how extensive these platforms are.
Yeah, definitely a good idea to diversify where possible. And now let's move on to our next story, which we'll also be talking about Amazon, but with to do with its partnership with Netflix. So they announced a partnership which provides advertisers using Amazon's DSP with direct access to Netflix premium ad inventory. The Amazon DSP is available to Amazon Ads users. It leverages first-party data insights to bring advertisers and publishers closer together, harnessing AI to deliver ads to relevant audiences. So the new offering will be available in 11 countries, including the UK, starting from Q4 this year. So how does this partnership impact the ad tech landscape, John? What does it mean for advertisers?
super interesting. You know, a totally new way to buy advertising across Netflix. I think it's fascinating that the two have teamed up, given that Prime and Netflix are often, you know, they are competing in completely the same market. So for Netflix to go through Amazon is, I think, a really interesting move. They tried to build in-house with Microsoft. They call Microsoft Advertising or Xandr. I'm not sure which way the name change went, but they built in-house with that and that didn't work. So interesting that they are, you know, getting involved with Amazon, and it's like a strengthening of Amazon as well to have Netflix involved in their ad server. I think it is, yeah, quite, it's bold for them to team up, and it's a very interesting headline. I quite liked seeing it, and I'm not sure where it goes in terms of consolidation, but it's no fascinating story.
Yeah, very big partnership there. Rich, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, definitely a big win for Amazon. They just keep on growing. It sounds like they're doing very well. You know, really coming for DV360 and the Trade Desk. Sounds like they are being very competitive on price as well to kind of win those advertisers. But yeah, certainly it makes sense. Obviously, it's one of the biggest content platforms and the biggest commerce platforms. So the, you know, very rich data that Amazon has, bringing that to the content side, I'm sure is going to lead to much better measurement for advertisers. As to your point there, John, it is interesting. Yeah, kind of almost providing one part of the tech stack to a direct competitor and how that will work, given I'm sure there must be some very strict rules in place for what Netflix will allow the kind of Amazon DSP to access and then share with the kind of Prime team. So who knows, maybe we'll be discussing a court case there in a few years' time if something goes wrong. But yeah, makes a lot of sense for advertisers. Obviously, to our previous point, if things go well and it's all transparent and fair, then yeah, great. Reaching a whole new massive audience of premium content through the Amazon DSP and tying that to the transaction data that they have makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And Rich, do you think it's positive to see such a large, two companies of such large size partner like this? What do you think it could mean for like smaller DSPs?
Yeah, I mean, look, for smaller DSPs in general, I think you really have to have a niche. So I don't think this necessarily changes anything too much in that regard, because if you're a small DSP, access to kind of large scale premium inventory that others have is not ever really going to be your USP, as we'll come to discuss about Deep Intent, the kind of pharmaceutical DSP. So I think, yeah, it probably does ruffle a few feathers, but I think ultimately, from a strategic sort of perspective, you know, smaller DSPs have to have a specific niche, whether that's the kind of inventory or the data or the region or, you know, whatever it might be. So I don't think that it makes a massive difference to those who are kind of carving out a specific niche and not just relying on kind of access to the same inventory as more scaled players who are often competing more on price.
John, do you agree with Rich?
Yeah, I don't know if positive is the word. It is very interesting. I think for smaller DSPs, it's probably a shame. It's, you know, a big fish that they could have landed and have gone with another bigger fish. So it's a bit, for smaller DSPs, maybe a little bit of a blow that they're not going to be involved in Netflix and Netflix's ads. But I'm on the fence in terms of this being positive. I think more interesting than anything else.
Do we know what level of exclusivity there was with this? Will other smaller DSPs be able to access Netflix content in time? I wasn't sure.
No, I have no idea.
So that'd be interesting to see as well. It kind of comes back to that slightly monopolistic point, doesn't it? Of kind of large walled gardens taking it all for themselves, or will we end up in a more collaborative sort of hedged garden world where smaller DSPs can also still bid on that inventory?
Yeah, fingers crossed. Yeah. Be good.
Yeah. So now moving on to our third segment, we're looking at some recent industry acquisitions. Video platform Vimeo is being acquired by Italian app developer Bending Spoons for about $1.4 billion. Vimeo has lost around 90% of its market value since it went public a few years ago, having faced a struggle to stand out in a crowded video market hugely dominated by YouTube. Meanwhile, UK-based private equity firm Vitruvian Partners made a $637 million investment in Deep Intent, a healthcare-focused demand-side platform which specializes in helping pharma brands reach patients and providers using programmatic advertising. Rich, what does the high level of M&A activity in the industry at the moment tell us?
Yeah, it was a really exciting week in this regard. You've got nearly $2 billion worth of transaction volume there and a lot of European players involved as well. So, you know, Vitruvian Partners is a London-based firm. Its latest fund is $7 billion and they've deployed nearly 10% of that into Deep Intent. And then Bending Spoons is a Milan-based company that's been very acquisitive, typically buy more distressed assets and kind of, you know, rationalizing cost and then sort of streamlining them and turning them around. You know, they bought Evernote and WeTransfer, Bright Cove. So yeah, again, I think it was an all cash deal. So, you know, $1.3 billion and plus the sort of 600 million. So yeah, nearly 2 billion with a lot of European funding coming there. So yeah, great to see from a European perspective. And I think, yeah, Bending Spoons is really this kind of sleeping ad tech giant. It seems like, you know, they are very acquisitive. They only became on our radar earlier in this year when they bought Bright Cove. But yeah, I think it's a kind of a fascinating addition in terms of that kind of access to streaming content and sort of data. Coming back to the earlier point, we can't not talk about the coming Google, you know, and the kind of direct competitor with YouTube is clearly where Vimeo has struggled since going public. And as you say, has lost 90% of its value. But given the, I think now hundreds of millions of users that Bending Spoons have access to through WeTransfer and Evernote and other apps, it'll be interesting to see if that kind of increased distribution to those users does allow Vimeo to scale without having to be a kind of direct competitor to YouTube in the sense of a standalone destination site, which is just always going to be difficult to get users to actually go to.
Yeah, definitely. So on that note, John, do you think this acquisition could help Vimeo like compete a bit more with YouTube?
No, not at all. It will help. I mean, Bending Spoons, they do come in and they, like Rich said, they balance the books and the companies that they come in and take over. They did that with WeTransfer, Bright Cove. It's their business model, really. But I don't think the raison d'etre for Vimeo here is going to be to compete with YouTube. YouTube, I mean, I did the YouTube panel at ATS London last week, and we talked about it more like it is kind of a platform rather than, it is more of I can't even think of the word. Let's just can that. YouTube's huge and is not going to be able to be caught by Vimeo. But there's smart ways of being involved as a video platform, of having your own niche. And I'm sure as Bending Spoons take over, they'll find a way to make it more profitable than it has been. But in terms of taking on YouTube, no, it's that market's that's been cornered off, I think.
Yeah, they definitely can't compete just yet.
Or 110 million creators on YouTube.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Wow.
It's mad. It's a complete ecosystem was the word I was looking for that completely failed me during edit. It is its own ecosystem now. It has room for advertisers. It has room for publishers to make the most of it. You know, Sky doing huge deals with it. Channel 4 are putting their own shows on it. It is not seen as competition or the shark in the water. It is another way of publishers to get their content out now. So yeah, it is its own ecosystem. I don't think Vimeo would be wise to compete directly, but to find their own video niche.
Yeah, absolutely. And Rich, do you think there's a reason that we're seeing so many DSP deals specifically at the moment?
Well, as ever, a fascinating time in ad tech and in M&A. We've got, you know, the continued, I'd say, convergence of buy side and sell side. And so I think everybody in the ad tech ecosystem is just constantly on this mission to really kind of increase their capabilities. With regards to obviously deep intent, you know, for a while we've been talking about the benefits of, you know, vertically focused ad tech businesses and vertically focused ad networks. We're actually planning to launch something in the pharmaceutical kind of data space through First Party Studio, which is exciting. So yeah, it was great to see Deep Intent getting bought by Vitruvian Partners here. So I think, yeah, you know, there's always been a lot of acquisition in ad tech, and I think we'll just continue to see that, not just with DSPs, but I think, yeah, across the ecosystem. And yeah, great to see, as I said, private equity coming in as well, which has really been a cornerstone of those larger deals in Europe with, you know, MIQ, Equative, SeedTag, LoopMe. There's been a bunch of others, obviously less so in terms of IPOs here that they tend to happen in the States, but it's great to see there are kind of, you know, nine figure, potentially larger budgets from those PE firms to continue to help European ad tech companies to scale.
Yeah, there's been a lot of activity. John, what do you think?
It's a really healthy scene at the moment. I think we've seen the sales of Kevel and Nexter over the last year that have been really, really great, really interesting deals for European ad tech. So it's good to see the European companies getting noticed. I think it's a fertile ground for innovation at the moment. And I know, you know, Andrew Casale's talked to Kieran recently about just how fertile innovation is at the moment and what a great time we are in for ad tech innovation. Obviously there's the, you know, we're talking about the monopolies and the clouds that hang over, But that aside, there's lots of really good small companies who are out there doing great stuff and getting noticed. So it can only be, this kind of acquisition can only be healthy for the European industry, I think.
Yeah, definitely. You know, there's been some good deals this summer. Greenbids was acquired by Perion. Digiseg was acquired by Hawk Infinity. And I think, yeah, some of these deals probably fly under the radar of some of the more mainstream financial press because maybe they're in the sort of $50 to $150 million valuation range. And they're not necessarily the kind of unicorn IPOs that get the TechCrunch articles. But, you know, they are getting acquired at really good multiples. You know, Greenbids, I think, was only around for 2 or 3 years and got acquired at a valuation of 60 million, if you include the earnout. So yeah, some really good, you know, stuff coming through. And yeah, leans nicely into, hopefully, our narrative. We've got 18 companies in our portfolio now. Some of those are starting to mature to a point where they are getting that strategic interest. And yeah, it is generally large US acquirers from the kind of more strategic side that are looking to expand internationally, that are looking at those European assets. And then obviously here in London, a lot of the private equity firms are based, which typically tends to follow companies that have more of a managed service type business model, which is sort of highly profitable at a MIQ and others.
Yeah. And all those companies we mentioned that were acquired have all done trader talks with ExchangeWire recently. Maybe that's the key to getting
that's the secret.
Get your face on screen with us.
And Rich, do you think we're going to see like the same sort of level of activity in M&A over the next few years?
I was about to say yes, and then I took a half a breath of pause just because any few years is quite a lot. We don't know what's going to happen. Oh my God, I was on the Mad Tip podcast earlier this year, and I think we had to re-edit it a bit because Trump came out with all this crazy stuff with Liberation Day, and I think what I said aged very quickly. So I'm hesitant to commit to a prediction a few years away. But yeah, I think, look, on the current kind of trajectory, there's clearly a lot going on within the ad tech space in terms of emerging channels, retail media, digital out of home, CTV. So I think capability wise, you know, those larger companies will continue to, you know, kind of do those bolt-on acquisitions. You've now got all these new private equity backed companies like Deep Intent, and a lot of the funds will be used for M&A. You know, similarly, we were talking with Alvaro from TapTap last week on our panel. They raised a lot of money from a private equity firm, and you know, now they're starting to become an acquirer. So, yeah, I think the kind of universe of potential acquirers has grown, you know, exponentially over the last 5 years with all the new publicly listed companies, all the non-endemic companies like Coinbase and others coming into the space and acquiring ad tech assets. So, yeah, I think, you know, it's just quite a unique industry where there is always going to be a lot of M&A acquisition. And you know that kind of plays nicely into the types of companies that we're investing in.
Absolutely, yeah, it's an exciting space at the moment. Lots going on, and yeah, I'm sure we'll see more over the next few years. Yeah, but I think that's a good note to finish on. Thanks both for joining me. Thanks so much, Rich, for being our guest today.
You're welcome. It's always a pleasure. Thanks a lot.
And thank you, John.
Thanks very much. I'm excited to see how our new look studio looks on the old video. So we'll see later on. But yeah, thank you for having me as always.
Thank you, and thanks to all our listeners.
You've been listening to the Mad Tech Podcast, brought to you by ExchangeWire.